looking at Nehemiah chapter 6. I just want to read verse 3. And I send messengers unto them, that is the enemies of the Jews, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Well, my topic for this evening's study is a great work. A great work that is referred to here by Nehemiah in chapter 6 and verse 3. Previously, we thought about it as a good work that he was doing, the building of the wall. When he spoke to the brethren to encourage them to start the work, he said, brethren, let's do it. This is a good work. I paraphrase, of course, what he's saying. But now to the enemies, he says, when they want to distract him and deter him from the work and to stop the work, he says, I'm doing a great work and I cannot come down. Well, it's in this chapter, really, as you see, as we've read it, it's really about the assaults that come on the Jews yet again. And it's specifically with Nehemiah in mind. There seem to be specific attacks on the leader, and to get him to stumble and fall. If they can get him, they feel, well, then the work will definitely cease. The work will come to a halt. And so one thing after another, they are trying. So, but I've given it the title of a great work because in spite of all the attacks, and that seems more the topic of the subject, it's because Nehemiah has in his mind and in his heart and his determination that and persuasion that the work he is doing is so important and so necessary and so vital that he cannot be distracted by these other things. And he uses that thought to fend off, as it were, the attacks that come upon him and are directed towards him. And that's a help even towards us, for us, as we'll see as we go along. Now, chapter 6, verse 1, it came to pass when Sambalat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of the enemies heard that I builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates. I just want to begin with a little of a technical statement here. It says here at the end in brackets, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates. Now you may have noticed in chapter 3, it is actually said that the doors were complete. In chapter 3 and verse 6, when they talk about the old gate being repaired, at the end it says, and they set up the doors thereof, and the locks thereof, and the bars thereof. And then in verse 13 again, the valley gate, they set up the doors, the locks thereof, and the bars thereof. So how can we reconcile what we read here in chapter 3 and what's said here in chapter 6 and verse 1? Well, it's quite straightforward, actually. The answer, the resolution is, chapter 3 is just a summary of the whole work from the beginning to the end, whereas chapter 4, 5 and 6 is detailing, giving more detail about things which have happened along the way during that time of building. And that's really just a technical point, but it helps us a little bit to understand that these things, when the timing of when these things took place. And so first, here we see in verse 2, the first attack, a subtle attack, is made. Come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono, Sambalat and Geshem say. But they thought to do me mischief. Ono is some 25 to 30 miles away from Jerusalem in Benjamin. It's not somewhere close by, it's not somewhere nearby. They want to get him far away from the work. And they schemed and they've plotted to get him away in order to do him mischief, to do him some harm. What kind of harm? Maybe to capture him and to enslave him, to imprison him there, or even worse, to kill him, to get rid of him completely. Wouldn't be surprised if that was really their intention to do. But in verse 3, his response is via the messengers, "I am doing a great work, so I cannot come down. Why should the work cease and whilst I leave it and come down to you?" He knew, he could see through this request. He knew they were up to some mischief. He knew there was something not right about it. Of course, they'd already given evidence that they were against the work. And he knew that if he went down, then the work would cease temporarily. But if they killed him, if they got rid of him, then the work probably would have ceased permanently. And so he's aware of these things. So he refuses to go down because he cannot be distracted. He cannot be diverted from the building of the wall. And they try again and again. Verse 4, four times they tried and four times he has to respond in the same way. They are determined to get him, but he is just as determined to resist their attempts again and again, and is determined to finish the work. Well, friends, this statement is a great statement. I am doing a great work. And of course, we've referred to it already. If you don't mind me saying it again. But even as a church, when we're engaged in the Lord's work, it is not only a good work, it's also a great work that we're employed in. Maybe it's the best work, we could say, in all the world, to be employed for the Lord and to be doing His work, to be reaching out to souls, to be preaching the gospel in the streets and in the church, to have a Sunday school, evangelistic Sunday school. Oh, friends, to be praying for souls, isn't that a great work that we are engaged in? Who else is praying for souls? Only believers are praying for souls. And this is a great work for us to be doing. And not only, we could say, as a church, but even personally, there are great works that we are involved in. Sanctification, that's a great work that we should be doing personally. Personal witness, seeking to win others, ourselves, bring others to the Lord, to the church. These are things, great works, that should also, we should remind ourselves, these are things I mustn't be distracted from. The devil will try, the world will try to distract you from these great things that you are engaged in. But we must remember, I cannot allow my sanctification to just be forgotten about. I cannot allow personal witness or public witness just stop altogether. I must pay attention to these things. So much will come in, friends, to distract you from these things. It may not be an obvious distraction, like here, maybe it'll be a subtle one of some sort, but its aim will be to take you away from that great work, that significant thing that you are doing. These are the things that really matter. These are the things that have an impact on our own holiness and our walk with God and on the society around us. If only we could keep these things in mind. And then look at what he says, I am doing a great work. He doesn't say, I was doing a great work and now I've stopped, or I used to do a great work and that's it. And now I no longer do it. Oh, I remember months ago, I used to do a great work. No, I am doing a great work. I'm still doing it. I'm continuing to do it. And I will continue. That's the sort of spirit and attitude, our friends, a determination that we also need to have. Do you mind if I take this a little bit further and think of the Lord? The Lord who said, and we could say of him, isn't it, I am doing a great work. So many times, there were times when people tried to distract him from his work. The Pharisees wanted to have him on their side, but he wouldn't. He said, I'm doing a great work. Then they wanted to make him a king, and the people wanted to crown him as king and as a political messiah. No, I am a redeemer. I've come to do a great work. I cannot engage in those things. And then when we think of the cross, isn't the cross, people said to him as they were passing by in ridicule and mocking, come down from the cross and we will believe in you. Come down and then we will trust in you. And then we will see your glory. I cannot come down. I'm doing a great work. I'm bearing the sins of my people. I'm redeeming them. I cannot come down. Of course he could. He had the power to. But in his heart he wouldn't give way to that sort of suggestions. And what a great work he has done. Well, there's a thought for us as we come to the Lord's Supper tonight. But then, secondly, we can see how his reputation came under attack in verses 5 to 9. Sanballat then sent his servant a fifth time, and this time with an open letter in his hand. That was a letter that wasn't sealed. It wasn't put in a bag. It was open, and everyone to whose hands it passed could read the letter. And it was deliberately put down in that way so that people could see the contents, which were accusing Nehemiah of rebelling and of encouraging rebellion by building the wall. Or you're encouraging treason against the king. And you're doing all these things to appoint yourself as a king. That's what you want. That's why you're doing all these things. There is a king in Judah, and you're having prophets to preach at Jerusalem. You're promoting yourself. You're usurping a position to yourself which doesn't belong to you, Nehemiah. Come now. We're going to report these things to the king. Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together. And so there's these allegations, the slander that is made against him very openly. And slander does do a lot of harm. And spoiling a person's reputation, especially those who are in leadership, that can do a lot of harm. And that's another one of the enemy's tactics. In verse 8 he says, there are no such things done as thou sayest, but thou feignest them out of thine own heart. For they all made us afraid, saying that their hands shall be weakened from the work, that it be not done. Now therefore, O God, strengthen my hands. Well, the same sort of attack the Apostle Paul also had to face. And where his reputation came under attack, sometimes from the Jews themselves. In Acts chapter 25 and verse 7, I'll just read that to you. The Jews, when they came before Festus, verse 7, when he was come, the Jews which came down from Jerusalem stood round about and laid many and grievous complaints against Paul, which they could not prove. And things that they were saying about him. And of course we know what happened with the Corinthians, how he had to prove his apostleship to them. And even in 2 Corinthians 6 and verse 8. I'll just read that to you. He says, by honor and dishonor, by evil report and a good report, as deceivers and yet true. So there were good reports about him, and there were also evil reports about him. And he had to face all these things and handle and respond to them. Well, Nehemiah responds by denying all these things because he said these are all things you've made up. These are just things that have come out of your own heart, feigned out of your own heart. Oh, the human heart, friends. Here we have a little insight into it again. How it is so set on evil. He can devise evil. He can invent many ways to do harm to other people. Imagine that. Here we have one man and the people with him doing good. And we have another group of people who are thinking and planning and scheming how to do evil to a person. And that's how the heart of man is capable of these things. The Lord himself said it, didn't he? Out of the heart come, proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, and so on. And again, Jeremiah, every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And that is sadly the state of people's heart. But it's a terror when you really think about it, that here are people fighting against each other, hating one another, when it should really be the other way. There should be more of acceptance. But people today, again, they think love is going to triumph in the end. But the heart of man says otherwise. There will always be hatred in the world until the Lord comes, and especially for the Lord's people and who stand up for him and his standards. Well, thirdly, we see how his faith came under attack in verses 10 to 14. Verse 10, after I came unto the house of Shemaiah the son of Deliah, the son of Mehathabeel, who was shut up. Now, what does that mean? Well, it could. There is a number of meanings that are given by the commentators regarding this shut up. He was restricted to his own home. He was in some sort of lockdown in his own home. But why? Why was he shut up? Well, some say perhaps it was due to ceremonial uncleanness. He was a priest and he couldn't mix with others for a time. Or it could be a symbolic gesture signifying to Nehemiah, this is what you should be doing. You should be hiding yourself also in your home. Or it may be because he wanted to give the impression to Nehemiah, oh, my life is also in danger. I am the same as you. Both of us are in danger. So perhaps that last one is the reason that we're not exactly sure. But he says to Nehemiah, let's meet together, this time, not far away, but close by, in the house of God, within the temple. Let's shut the doors, for they're coming to slay you. They're going to come after you tonight to kill you. Let's find safety and refuge in the holy place, in the temple, not just the temple itself. Let's go into the holy place. And Nehemiah answers, should such a man as I flee? And who is there that being as I am will go into the temple to save his life? I will not go in. So here, this man, Shemaiah the priest, he's proposing that they take refuge in the holy place. And it was a place where only priests could enter. Nehemiah wasn't a priest, so he couldn't enter into this place. To do so would be sin. It would be a sin for him. But he says, why should I do this thing? Why should I run away? For my own self-protection? That would be a faithless act. If he gave in to fear, if he became afraid by these words of Shemaiah, well, that would be show that he didn't have confidence in God to protect him and to keep him safe. And it would be a bad testimony, of course, to everyone else. He was the leader. He was the chief governor. What sort of message would that convey to all the people? And as we said, it would be, after all, unlawful for him to go in. So I will not go in. He had no reason to run. He had no reason to hide. He had done nothing wrong. Run into the temple for safety would imply, oh, he's guilty. That's why he's doing it. But verse 13, Therefore was he high that I should be afraid, and do so, and sin, and that they might have matter for an evil report, that they might reproach me. So they will, if Nehemiah had gone to the temple with this man, they would have said, look what he's done. He sinned by going to the temple, or he's running away to save his own life, to protect his own life. And they would have matter. They would have some evidence with which they could accuse him. So Nehemiah is very careful in how he responds to things. He's very careful to see, well, what are the implications of doing this particular action? Where will it lead? Will it affect the work? Will it affect the name of God? He thinks these things through. And he refuses to give the enemy any matter, any substance, any hold on him, any way where they can point a finger and say, ah, you did wrong in this and this area. Verse 14, and it's in, my God, think thou upon Tobiah and Sanballat. Again, interesting how Nehemiah intersperses these events with a prayer, with a look up to God. And it says, think thou upon them according to these their works, and on the prophetess Noadiah. She was a false prophetess who, along with the others, had tried to intimidate Nehemiah and to put him in fear. Well, friends, the Lord tries our faith, but the devil attacks it and seeks to put us in fear. The Lord tries our faith to increase it and to make it stronger and to give us a better hold on him and to improve it. But the devil seeks to bring us into fear when things and to especially maybe when things are against us, to make us to doubt. Will God help us? Will God protect us? Will God provide for us? Well, in those times we must trust in him. Don't take matters into our own hands. Don't come up with our own schemes to save ourselves. Don't give in to fear, even to such an extent that it topples our faith. Yes, we feel the fears, we feel the troubles, but we say with the psalmist, when I am afraid, I will trust in the Lord. Oh, friends, as I come to a close, we see here in verse 15 and 9 to 19, the enemies are defeated. The wall is finished there in verse 15, in 52 days in the month of Elul, as late August to early September. And when they saw that all their efforts to halt the work had been unsuccessful, no matter what they tried, no matter which way they came, and they've tried so many different ways, such a variety of tricks, nothing worked. The Lord intervened each time. The Lord gave Nehemiah great wisdom to fight off and to see through their attacks and their own conclusion. They are cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was of God. That God, they saw that God would protect his people. They saw that they, no matter what they tried, God was going to overturn it. And they came to that conclusion. This is a work of God. Even the enemies of God have come to that conclusion now. And then in verse 17 to 19, we read again about the situation that was in Jerusalem. There had been this intermarriage in those days, not after the wall had been built, but while the wall was in the process of being built. They had these intermarriages between Tobiah and some of the nobles, the Jews, who were in Jerusalem, in Judah. And also Tobiah's own son had taken a Jewish lady as his wife. And so there was this mixed marriages, which was actually forbidden. And there were traitors within the very city, traitors among their own people. and there all this reporting going back and forward. Nehemiah is doing this, Nehemiah is doing that. And also there were the messengers through which the letters came from Tobiah to put him in fear. So it gives us a little insight into why Tobiah really had such influence in the city with the Jews in Jerusalem. But as we conclude, dear friends, let us go back to that thought. I am doing a great work so that I cannot come down. Let nothing deter us from this great work that we are doing for the Lord and for His glory. And when we are weary in it, as we sometimes are, and when we feel discouraged, as we sometimes are, let us again remind ourselves, it is a good work, it is a great work. Lord, may the Lord give us a grace to continue faithfully doing it right up to the very end.